Hey guys, episode 2 of Working Class on Deercast. We are back. Clint Casper, what's up, brother? Thanks for joining me.
What's up, my man? Proud and my pleasure to be here. This is going to be awesome teaming up with all this, mixing it together, and I'm super stoked for what all we got going on.
Yeah, so this is cool. Like, this works good enough, the Zoom call. You were actually supposed to be at the WCB studio today.
But, I was.
I was telling everyone you push it too hard and you hurt your knee. And so you're at home back in Ohio, but you are a frequent guest on the normal Working Class Bowhunter series. People love you there. You're enthusiastic. You're loud. You're kind of in everybody's face. But for people in the Deercast community, if they don't know who you are or haven't read your articles or anything like that, just explain who you are, what you do, where you're from, all that good stuff.
Yeah, man, my pleasure. Yeah, Clint Casper, born and raised right here in Ohio, farm boy. Grew up here hunting whitetails and turkeys. That's what we got here besides small game. So no elk and mule deer for me to chase here in Ohio. But yeah, cut my teeth on whitetails. You know, still my first love as far as the bow hunting game goes is whitetails. Got two little boys. Easton's 5, Keaton's 2.5. So they're just getting into it now as far as trail cams and, you know, going with me. And it's fun to have them, yeah. You know, join the crowd, join the show and whatnot. But yeah, as far as me, right full time for Peterson's bow hunting. So it's been awesome to be able to, you know, be in the podcast world with you guys and a couple other different ones and then do the writing full time. That's always been a dream of mine. Grain farm with my dad and check gas and oil wells. Those are kind of like my day jobs outside of the hunting stuff. But yeah, found a home with Peterson's bow hunting about 5 years ago, full time, and been with them ever since. So kind of living out a couple different dreams there.
You got to get it the way you can get it, man. I was going to bring up the farming side of things because I know that's something that's going to come up as we have guests on, different co-hosts and stuff, is like, people want to know, I mean, we don't need to hit it hard, but like what you do for a living or where you started from. But I always call you on the normal Working Class series that you're the most Western dude east of the Mississippi.
I definitely do like to get after it out West. I was, it was in Utah, chased some muleys around for a week, come back home for a week, and then went to Wyoming with you, got to help you kill that great buck out there, and then went straight to Utah, chased the same big buck around for another 7 days, home here, trying to rest this knee up, and then next week, head back back out west to chase bugles around for the end of the elk rut. So, stoked, man.
I worry about your knee.
I got some shots and I got some things going on. So hopefully that, you know, I've been here before. I injured it in Colorado a couple of years ago, packing a mule deer out. And
that's where this whole injury stemmed from.
Yeah. Same knee, same deal. Yeah. Just, it's almost like I like hyperextend it. You know what I mean? And it's kind of one of those deals. Once you do it, you're sort of right back in the same mix.
Yeah. I can see how that happens. Well, we're on Deercast, so I think we need to focus on whitetails as much as you love your mule deer and your elk hunting and all that.
Absolutely. But tis the season.
Tis the season, especially
next week we open.
Yeah. So Missouri opened like as the time we're recording this a few days ago.
Yes.
And there was some awesome opening day success in the Drury team. If you're on Deercast, you've probably already seen that and seen it on
Deercast. Yeah, some great 21. Bucks.
Crazy. So that's cool. I told Mark that the WCB studio blessed him when he was in for episode 1 of the series. So he's like,
yeah,
you know, but no, let's talk about whitetails. You know, you are more focused on the eastern side of the Midwest, or you're not quite, I don't really consider you in the east, but
right.
I consider Pennsylvania the east, and you're not.
I'm like right on the edge.
Right. You're right there. You're like, you're still Midwest, but it's right in there. So right now, Ohio opens a little before, if I'm not mistaken, a little bit before like Illinois and Iowa season opener, which is October 1st.
Yep.
So what are you looking at right now? You know, we're focusing whitetails. I mean, right now people are getting excited. Velvet's off. Seasons are opening. Everyone's getting kind of like anxious for opening day if it's not already open in your state. What are you doing right now to kind of plan for this early season whitetail vibe?
Yeah, man. I mean, anyone that knows me or is a friend of mine or has listened to me on the podcast or read the articles, I love early and late, man. Patterns kill big deer, and I don't think there's any better time to pattern a buck, especially a specific buck you're hunting, which every year I like to, you know, that's kind of the game I like to play. I like to have a buck or two that I'm going to go after. Usually I've got history and sheds and that kind of deal. So for me right now, it's just all about putting those final pieces together. I mean, the couple bucks I've been targeting, I've been jotting down, and I got a notebook, every daylight picture. I go back through wind direction, moon phase, what direction he came from, morning or evening. You know, I'm just trying to pinpoint where they're bedding, where they're feeding. Big part of that game's wind direction. I mean, they live and die by that nose. There's always a correlation between every big buck I've killed. There was a certain wind that it was almost, you know, he was always in daylight as on like that wind or a wind that was out of that direction, you know, whether it's a southwest, southeast, but it was a south wind of some sort or, you know, whatever. Right. So I'm trying to figure that out right now.
Basically
key in on those early patterns.
Yeah. Basically why he's moving when he does on that, like what's the reason for it?
What
you're trying to find basically the pattern of why really.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, and that's, I mean, I think a whitetail's best defense is that nose, but I also think that's their biggest flaw and weakness too, because if you can figure out why his nose likes a certain wind and you can hunt him on that wind, and it's all about hunting a buck on a wind that's good for him, not a wind that's good for me or you.
Yeah.
You know, you got to hunt a wind that's good for the buck, makes him feel comfortable. If you can get in there and figure out how to hunt that wind, I mean, your odds and chances just go up. And then you pair that with like DeerCast and the weather app as far as, okay, you know, you got a front coming in, front coming out. You look at your, you know, barometric pressure that rises and falls. I mean, that's all helping you get a buck up on his feet.
Yeah.
But that main key ingredient, in my opinion, is, you know, right there, man, they live and die by that. And as I know that's their best defense, but I think it's also their weakest flaw in their armor, because once you figure that out, like I said, that's, in my opinion, 3/4 of the game is figure out what wind that buck likes on that certain piece of property or that farm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's going to really help you figure out bed, feed, transition area. You know, I mean, that gives you spots to kill him, man, once you figure that out, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Do you think, I kind of know the answer to this, but I just want to hear you elaborate on it. Do you think that the wind plays a bigger role early and late season rather than the block of pre-rut, rut, and post-rut?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think in the rut, honestly, I mean, if a doe decides, if she's in heat and he's locked in and that's all his mind's on, and she decides to run with the wind at her tail end, honestly, he's going to do that. I mean, they're not thinking with that the right brain at that moment in time. Whereas early and late, I mean, you know, it's crazy. I've had bucks coming in, the wind switches and immediately they switch where they're going, what they're doing to be able to quarter that wind and still allow that wind to help them.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had deer on their way to me. It's perfect. I feel the wind switch to where I'm like, uh-oh. And immediately they're like, yep, we're going to turn course. They're still heading in the right direction, but they made sure they quartered the wind to still allow them to know what's coming from ahead.
Right.
And that just wasn't the right deal for me in that moment in time. But I mean, you can, you know, I've learned a lot by just seeing how that little shift shifts them too. So, I mean, you know, it's thermals. I mean, you know, I mean, a lot of that stuff plays a factor because, I mean, like I said, they live and die by it, but if you can figure it out, you know, that's where it's at. But early and late, yeah, I think the wind's where it's at. And I think it's most consistent too. I mean, like I said, in the rut, you got so much chaos and patterns are kind of thrown out the window. Early and late, I mean, it's pretty much strict bed to feed to bed. And that's kind of what they're doing. You figure that out, you got a good chance of killing one.
It's probably more, I don't know, I guess somebody could throw in the argument that the wind is probably more important for a deer late season when they're paranoid from all the pressure.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? And smelling human, you know, hopefully you put in as the least amount of human intrusion as possible during the season, but they're, you know, just in general, they're on pins and needles. They've been through gun seasons. They've been shot at. You know, they've smelled people. There's four wheelers. I mean, just whatever neighboring pressure it's gotta be chaotic for a whitetail during that whole time, you know, obviously, but, I like that. I like that you brought that up, that, you know, you can watch a deer and the wind changes, and you know, it's nothing that you did as a hunter. You can't really help when that stuff happens, but if a deer has the power to know what's ahead of him before he gets there, before he can see there, why would he not put it into his advantage? Which I think for me personally, when I started thinking more that way and thinking about the quartering winds, you know, the wind works for the deer. I've killed a lot more deer consistently and quicker. You know, it doesn't always work that way, but I feel like my consistency of success has went up easily 40-50% in the last 6 years of doing the podcast. And really a lot of that is not stuff I learned on my own. It's stuff I learned from guests like you and some of our buddies, Chandler, Ross, Clark Cummins. You know, the Clark Cummins, one of the podcasts we did, he hit that home really hard about the quartering wins thing. And it was like in my head, I'm like, I don't know why I never applied it in that way. I always knew about wind, but I didn't know how to actually use the wind, you know, especially on a hanging hunt. When you go in and you're throwing up a stand to try and basically ambush or catch a deer off guard, you know, the first sit, that stuff's important.
Well, and I mean, it's like if, you know, we use headlights in a car to see what's ahead. You turn our headlights off. Are you really going to want to drive a car at night? Probably not. I mean, you have no clue what's coming up. Well, for a whitetail, I mean, that's what he's got. He's got that nose, you know, as whitetails get older, it's a proven fact. Vision starts to go just like a human. Hearing starts to go. That nose though, man, that's there. I mean, that thing only gets stronger and better. I mean, that's what they've got to work with. You know, I mean, that is like quote unquote their headlight in the dark. I mean, so
kind of like a magic power, to smell. To be honest.
Yeah. I mean, they want to be able to smell, you know, if they can't smell what's ahead, there's no point of them going that direction. I mean, it's just, you know, that's just bred into them to be able to, you know, to do that and use their nose to their advantage. But like I said, that's also part of that armor too, that flaw, figure it out and you can go on. But yeah, I'd say that. And, you know, the trail cams are huge right now. I mean, just trying to figure out, you know, who's close to daylight. I mean, right now there's bucks that are going to maybe not be in daylight, but they're close. And all you need is a cold front coming through, or maybe the barometric pressure is going to really take a rise or really take a fall, just something to get that buck on his feet five minutes earlier. And now you're back in the game. So, I mean, I'm really paying attention to that, you know, and then you got crops coming off. Like right now we're chopping corn. You got beans turning brown. You got acorns, red and whites falling everywhere. Apples are dropping, pears. I mean, there's a ton of food out there. So that's all shifting. That's all changing.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of that has to do with the quote unquote October lull. I mean, that's a controversial topic, but I think that's what the law is deer changing what they're doing feed wise and bed wise. And it's not really a law. It's just, it's hard to keep up with what they're doing. If you're not in the hot spot, it's going to seem like there's no deer around, because right now the hot food source is going to attract 90% of your deer herd. I mean, and then once it's gone, they're moving to the next one, whether cornfield gets cut or beans are coming off or whatever's hot. That's where your deer are going to be, because they know rut's coming, winter's coming. Right now they got to pack on calories. Like, those bucks know what's going on. They know what's coming.
Right. Definitely. That makes sense. And yeah, the law thing, that's a whole topic for a whole nother episode.
Oh yeah.
And we'll do one on that. But I think a lot of it too, you know, some people might not have that food source on their piece. And so they experience,
you're in trouble.
You're in trouble. But then I think there's a lot of guys that are aware of what the deer are on, but don't want to pressure a certain block of timber and wait for a higher odds hunt than to go in to where they're at in the timber, you know, where, you know, from my experience, I think they feed really close to where they bed at that time of year. And that's just why you don't see them. So, and I get that, you know, I'm not saying never, because it just depends on the deer and the situation. I probably wouldn't trudge into a block of timber where I know the likelihood of me bumping a deer before I get a chance to get in on him before he knows I'm there is probably a lot lower during that time period than it would be the first section of the season before the lull. And before, I think your odds there are better than during the lull or after, when it goes, starts to become pre-rut time. So I don't know how you feel about it. If you are a guy that'll push in on timber when deer are in that different feed pattern, or
I like to get pretty aggressive early just because I like to try to take advantage of those patterns while I can. Usually the first couple weeks of our season, there's not a ton of corn and beans coming off. So that pattern does help us typically. As you get into October 10th, October 12th, man, we're taking corn off, taking beans off. I mean, stuff changes so drastically then that I really do push the envelope pretty hard early, as far as I'm not afraid to, hey, you know what? If I bump this buck now and I don't kill him, honestly, he was going to shift and change and probably be moving in the next week or two anyway on what was going on. So I'm a risk taker. You know, I mean, I'll roll the dice and go in knowing that I've also got the rut. I've also got late season, but if I can get in on a pattern, that's what I call a hot pattern, a pattern that definitely is there, I'm usually going to gamble on that. And I mean, and sometimes it's, hey, I've had years it's worked out, you know, I mean, I killed my best buck, my 191 extra. I killed him doing that. That was a gamble though. I mean, that was a tight.
What day was that?
September 20, let's see, it'd been 2016. It was September 26th, opening night.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yep.
That's crazy.
Now mind you, that deer had been around previous year, kind of knew what he was doing. Found one, let's see, found his left side, had a really good idea of where he was living, but come October 1st, 2nd, usually right around the end of our first week, he always transitioned away onto the neighbors. So I was really like, man, I'm going to hunt this buck hard and try to kill him in that first week, just because I kind of have an idea what he's doing. If I bump him, I bump him. But typically what he was doing is he was actually moving around with feed. We farm on the neighbors. So, I mean, I knew once crop started coming off, there's an old apple orchard over there. Apples start dropping. He always shifted that way. So my main deal was like, man, now that I kind of know what he's doing, I'm going to get in there and really hunt him hard. I'll be honest. In my brain, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going to kill him the first night. But I was really honestly shocked at 6:20, you know, to see him on his feet heading my way.
Right.
That was the plan. I just didn't think it was going to come together on the very first night. You know, I'm happy it did, like, you know, but, I really thought I'd get a crack in that first week. And that was kind of my hopes, was to roll the dice, and I could have blown him out, could have bumped him. But there again, though, you know, I think bucks circle back. I think they bed places for a reason. You bump a deer out, I mean, you know, honestly, a lot of times they're right back within 24 to 48 hours. I mean, and I'm a firm believer that I don't get real, you know, skittish about that. They bed there for a reason. Nope. It kept them alive. That's its job, you know? I mean,
and that makes perfect sense. But I mean, how much is too much, you think? Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good point. I mean, I think I wrote an article for Deer and Deer Hunting on this a few years ago. And I mean, I do think there's a point where a deer is going to be like, okay, this is a constant thing. Like, I'm always on pins and needles. It's the same, you know, this guy walks by me at 100 yards every night, five nights in a row. Yeah. I mean, honestly, at that point, you have intruded so much to where I do think he's going to relocate just to get away from that factor. But hey, you bump a buck, give him a day or two and go back in. I mean, honestly, I mean, I've killed a couple bucks just like that, where in my mind, I'm like, gosh, darn it. But I'm like, okay, well, we got to regroup and go right back in. And I mean, you know, I've killed a couple. And I mean, I know there's a lot of guys that, you know, feel the same, as far as just, you can bump a buck and, you know, it's not like you chased them or you ran them down with your truck. You know, I mean,
yeah.
And honestly, every day they're dealing with coyotes, they're dealing with dogs, they're dealing with people, they're dealing. So, I mean, you know, like I said, do I want to walk by a buck at 100 yards and shout and scream and let him know? I mean, obviously not, but I mean, I think they can handle more than what we actually think they'll handle as far as pressure before they're going to blow out of the area and completely vacate it to where we're going to relocate now.
There's almost a fine line between just the baseline pressure that a deer lives with all those other variables. And then there's 10 days ago, there wasn't Clint Casper running in here banging pots and pans. And now for the last five nights, I see Clint Casper yelling and I'm just tired of it. I'm going to move over here. You know, you can't blame a deer for that. You always should be cautious, but I get what you're saying too. It's like once or twice, you're probably fine. But don't be sloppy all the time. And not that you're being sloppy. It's sometimes you got to do certain things to get in to make a move on a buck. I mean, every circumstance, we could do 100 episodes on a different circumstance on where a buck beds versus your entry exit and all that stuff. But
absolutely.
I think it's always good to be cautious, but calculated.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. I mean, sometimes you've just got to roll the dice and shoot your shot. I mean, and you know, waiting on that perfect scenario, perfect opportunity, sometimes those never come, and you almost got to make an opportunity or make something happen. Mm-hmm. And there again, it's 50-50, man. You know, he might walk in at 20 and you smoke him, or you might blow him out and never see him that night. I mean, you know, that's all part of the game, but that's what makes it fun. And that's what we all love to do, is play that chess checker game. I mean, you know, that's what makes it fun with a big buck, is playing the game.
Yeah, definitely. What are you looking forward to? I mean, do you have some deer that you're hoping to catch up with? I mean, are you a guy that, if you don't have big bucks on camera during the summer, are you kind of like, man, what's going on? Getting a little stressed, or kind of where's Clint Casper's mindset right now?
Yeah. So, I mean, typically every year I've got at least one or two bucks. Like this year I've got two bucks, a lot of history with, the one deer I've had sheds and pictures of 4 years. He's been an eight or a nine every year. The last 2 years, he's been an eight. This year, I really think as a straight eight, he'll push 160, maybe even a touch more. I mean, just, well, I've sent you some photos. I mean, yeah. just,
oh, that's the
23, yeah, 24 yeah. wide. I mean, 7-8 inch brows, mm-hmm. 11, 12 inch twos and threes, just big swooping beams. You know, hey, I mean,
framing.
He's just, yeah, he's very framing. Yeah. He's just one of those bucks that when you see him, you're just like, dang, that's a good one. You know? And then I got another one that's a non-typical, you know, he should be a booner, a lot of points, probably 15, 16 scoreable. So those two bucks, a lot of history with, they're both 6-7 years old. You know, so I like playing that game, but I'll be honest, it's also kind of fun, to go into a season and not have a buck and just play the game and hunt and bounce around and run the trail cameras. And just like, it's like you're anticipating, when's the night I'm going to bounce into a big buck. And then, okay, yeah. now I'm locked in on that deer. Or maybe you just hunt, you hunt, the rut comes, and now you're like, okay, when a buck comes in that gets me going, like I always do the first look deal. You know, I've always got, it's the first look. Like I look at a buck, and if I'm like, oh dang, grab your bow, it's a shooter. If I got to grab binos or think about it, it's just not a shooter for me. And that's just yeah. over time, I've just adapted that. But it is yeah. kind of fun to not have like a specific buck some years and just be like, you know what? I'm going to hunt until a buck strikes me as, oh shoot, grab your bow, shooter. And then yeah, hey, right. game on, you know? So
yeah.
it's fun to play both sides. Cause it can be a long season, and we all say, oh, it's so much, it's so fun to hunt one buck, and it is fun, but it's also very discouraging. I mean, there's a lot of nights I'm hunting one deer, not yeah. seeing a deer, you know, I mean, I'm hunting yeah. a trail that he might take, and he might be the only deer that's been on that trail for a week, but that's a trail line, you know, or that's yeah, an yeah. area he's in. Long sits, long days. I mean, so, I mean, it's nice yeah. to mix it, but this like year I'm hoping to catch up with early. We'll see yeah. that, a big eight, man, you're kind of the king of big eights. I've got a 135 and a 148. And I mean, a mainframe 160 with a bunch of trash, but I don't have just a straight giant eight, man. And I it's going to be hard for me to, yeah, I'm probably going to hunt him right off the rip, man. And just go in. Yeah.
I got an eight pointer that's just shy of 160.
Ugh.
And then I have a 155 inch eight pointer. And
they're so big in person. So big in person.
They're just framey. Cause oh, there's not a lot there that makes a score. You know what I mean?
Right.
You got browse twos and threes and then,
yep.
And that's really it. But, yep. Going back, you're saying like targeting a specific buck, how that can kind of change your mindset. It's like one, you're always, it's almost like being in a really terrible relationship.
Oh yeah.
Because sometimes you never know where they are. They only send you a text picture of them every now and again.
Yep.
And then you're wondering if they're okay.
Yep.
And if they're going to make it through so you can finally get your date with them.
Yep.
I don't know if I've ever made that analogy before. Kind of works, kind of weird.
No, I mean, it really is. I mean, it is because it's a weird, like you said, like
you're jealous if they're spending time on the neighbor's property.
Oh yeah. 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 Well, it's like they give you just enough to keep them coming back. Like you're like, oh, she's at that bar tonight. I better go get a drink there. But then at the same time you walk in, you see her for 10 minutes and then she's out the door. You're gone. And it's like, I saw him in a bean field last night at 150 yards. Couldn't stalk him. Couldn't shoot him. I got to see him. Where's he been for the last 8 days? Yeah. No pictures, no yeah. sightings.
No.
Where's text. He at?
No. Hey, good morning text. Nothing.
No, nothing, nothing. No good nights. It's just, that's it.
That's ridiculous, but like, it kind of works, but it is that way. You know, it's like, if I get a deer on camera, there's one buck from last year I got pictures of mid October all the way through shed season. And he hasn't showed up yet. This yep. year. And, you know, I'm hoping he shows up mid October again. That's just, I think he summers and spends the majority of his time on another property that's nearby. That's fine.
Yep.
You know, come back to me. So I'm hoping he comes back mid October and is just a slob. Cause he was last year and I think he'll be 6.5 this year. We'll see what he is if, you know, but I'm wondering, is he alive? When's he going to reach out and say hello with the cell cam picture? Will he spend enough time where I have permission to hunt to where I can get a pattern on him or make a move on him or whatever.
Yep.
And yeah, so it's fun to have that. It's fun to have that in your mind. Like, dude, that'd be cool. Get all these trail cam pictures. I could target this one buck.
Yes.
It'd be a great story. Great memory. I have the trail cam pictures to kind of supplement all this, but it doesn't always work that way.
That's right. Very true. That's a good analogy. I like that.
Yeah. I don't know. I just made that up.
I like it.
But that's what, you know, that's cool. That's the fun thing about deer hunting. Sometimes you get those opportunities. Sometimes a new buck might show up that I've never seen that's bigger and badder, and creates this whole complicated relationship dynamic, which is a good thing.
Yep. No, it is.
It's a good thing with you and your target buck to have a relationship dynamic.
I got to plug this in. Hold on 1 second.
Yep. Oh, he's plugging in his laptop. Clint.
This thing was at 100% and I just happened to look at it and it just flashed and it's down to 13 somehow. Oh. Wow, her battery is shot. I just looked at that. I'm like, holy shit. I don't want this thing to freaking.
Good call. That would have been bad.
I don't know how it. Okay. All right. We're back. We're good.
We're back. Clint plugged in his laptop.
Had to plug her in.
But no, I think that's the whole, that analogy somehow works, but you know, but like you said, it's also fun to just go in without expectation at times. To me, when we talk about that, it reminds me of hunting when I was a kid,
was fun. That's the funnest. That's honestly the funnest hunting there is. No expectations. You're just out there to have a good time. And even like if it's brown, it's down mentality. Like I miss that. I miss 5 points.
Yeah.
It's getting me. I mean, I can remember first basket rack 8 point I ever saw while in a tree stand bow hunting. I mean, you would have swore it was the state record walking in.
Right. Well, yeah.
But that was fun. Like I think back to that and I smile because that was like, that was such a pure, like pure and raw, just God, I love to be here. I love bow hunting. That's, I don't love it now, but it's just different. It's different when you start to climb the bow hunting ladder. That's why I tell guys, enjoy it and enjoy being on those low kind of rungs, working your way up, enjoy shooting the does, shoot some small bucks. Like, I mean, hey, get your feet wet, enjoy it. Like it's fun to be in those moments and be present in that. You got your whole life to chase big bucks and hunt big, but like get yourself worked up to that level. I mean, I tell guys that all the time enjoy it. Enjoy that step your way up.
I think that's really important, especially for kids that are in that like 10 to 15 range.
Absolutely.
And becoming to where they're becoming independent bow hunters, you know, dad's going with them all the time, because I went through that same growth. I thought it was really important. You know, I killed a few deer with my dad when I was young and started little. I mean, I have them in the studio. I have my first buck with a bow. I mean, my first buck ever is he's not 100 inches.
Yeah.
And do I care? Nope. I have him hanging in the studio. I'm not ashamed of that at all. And then my first buck with a bow, you know, I had a few more years of hunting and it was my second or third year bow hunting. And I had this goal to just kill like a rackable type buck, you know, you know, like a good, he's an 8 pointer with a broken three. I think he's like 120 with his broken point. So he'd probably have been right at like 125, almost 130. Yep. I was ecstatic. That was a monster buck when I was 15 years old. You know what I mean? So it's just, you got to, you know, step up the ladder, enjoy your evolution of bow hunting and don't try to put yourself above, like, you know, I'm not holding myself now to 180 inch standard by any means. A good 140 walks in, I start getting excited. But I'm also to that point now where I'm like, okay, I've shot a lot of those deer. I've shot a lot of 140, 150, mid 50s bucks. And my wife hasn't said anything, but I can kind of see it's like, we're going to keep getting all these mounted. Like, so I need to be in that 160 plus, but I like to hunt and I get excited, man. I can't help
it. Oh yeah.
So
no, I get it.
A studio now I can hang all them deer at. So
that's right. That's right. You got a studio to fill up.
I'll keep shooting them, man.
Heck yeah.
I love it. Thermature, I'm in.
If it gets the blood pumping, man, it's time to bend the limbs back.
Yeah, exactly. Time to bend the limbs back. But no, I mean, we covered a lot of good stuff talking about when and the patterns and kind of like hunting specific deer and all that. Just real quick, you're going to go back and go on your elk hunt. You're going to try it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can't not hunt elk. I just can't.
Yeah. I don't blame you.
I'm about to take it a little easier. I mean, I'm going to have to be a little more cautious, a little more careful. And then, that mule deer tag in my pocket in Utah. So I'll probably go back and hunt the rut there.
What state?
I'll be in Utah.
Oh, you're going. Okay. Utah for your elk, and you got your mule deer tag.
Yep. Over the counter. So didn't draw the general, you know, or didn't draw the limited entry I got, but I got a general over the counter tag. So
Is where'd you kill your elk last? Was it last year you killed your bull in Utah?
Yeah. Yep. Over the counter unit. Yep.
Over the counter unit. Not the same unit, a different unit.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, it is the same unit.
Yep. Same unit. Yep.
Cool. Awesome.
Yep. Last 2 years I haven't drawn. The elk gods have not been real good to me on tags. So I've been going back to, you know, over the counter and it's fun. I mean, it's a tough unit, super highly hunted. Good population of elk, but I mean it's tough. You know, it's
a lot of people, right, in that unit.
A lot of people. Calling's not the effective way to kill them.
Yeah.
I do a lot of my chasing bugles per se at 3-4 o'clock in the morning when it's completely dark out. You know, I try to locate them then and then coyote the herd and catch up to them as they're working back to dark timber to bed and stuff. So it's a little bit of a different game, but it's fun. I mean, you still hear a lot of bugles. It's just a different, you know, it's a different way to hunt elk. But it's taught me a lot, you know. I mean, it's made me a better elk hunter by not just relying on a bugle tube and a mouth read to sound like a hot cow, you know. Right, so I mean,
well, cool.
But
hopefully we'll do a podcast on that on the normal working class bow hunter podcast series. So hey, thanks for joining me on episode 2 of this. We are actually going to segue in here soon to our giant tracker segment. Hopefully you're able to join me on there. We'll see what time we can get on. So that's going to be fun. But no, I appreciate you being the guest number 2 or co-host. More, if you were in person, we would call it co-host. But now that we had to Zoom in, you were a guest.
Heck, I got to blame the knee for that. Yeah, man, couldn't be more honored to be here on episode 2, man. This is awesome. I'm really looking forward to what the future holds for all of it.
Where can people find you if they're interested?
Yeah, man. Facebook, Clint Casper, Instagram, Casper Clint. Peterson's Bow Hunting in every issue. Usually once a month, I do at least one online article deal. Podcast world, man, WCB and kind of all over the place, but pretty much home base with Kurt and the gang and whatnot. So I'm kind of all over the board as far as that stuff goes, but
Awesome. Well, we're glad to have you. Thank you for doing this again. I know we could be in person, but you had to go
screw it
all up. But
I know.
We'll get you together. You had to just come in a week, just fly in, and we'll get some stuff done. But
absolutely.
Looking forward to it, man. Yeah, of course. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Hope you enjoyed this. Hope you like Clint here on Working Class on DeerCast. He's a good buddy of ours. And this is the second official segue. So hope you enjoy this giant tracker segment. And this is where I say, we'll see you on the next episode. Thanks for tuning in. Go shoot a giant. Appreciate you. All right, guys. Episode 2, giant tracker segment. We are here with Trent Linder from Missouri. And thank you for doing this so last second. I know you're working today. We're recording this on a Friday. And I got a hold of you earlier in the week. I'm like, dude, can you do it today? We're recording. You're like, yeah, I'm all in. So I much appreciated.
Yes, sir. It's a great opportunity. I'm glad to be here. I'm Trent Linder. I'm from St. Genevieve, Missouri. I started hunting when I was 7 years old, and it's just a passion of mine. I love being out there in the woods, and from there it evolved. I do a lot of trapping in the wintertime, and it's just cool. A passion of mine. So
very cool. Well, we want to get to this buck, and we're going to show some pictures. Actually, the buck's behind you, which is incredible. Beautiful mount. One of the questions that was sent from the boss man, Mark, he wanted to know, cause he's familiar with your area, from right around there. He wanted to know if you knew of any other deer in that area, or know of any other deer in that area, at any time that comes close to being that large. Cause from what I understand, and one of our producers for Working Class, he's from that area as well. He's like, that's not known for big bucks.
Yeah, as far as I know, a buddy of mine's grandpa killed a deer early 1950s, somewhere in that time area, and it was supposedly a little bit bigger than this one. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I haven't seen that deer, but
it probably doesn't exist then, right?
Well, they have a mound of it, but I don't know how big it is. It's a long time ago, obviously, but no, this area just. We just don't have deer like this. There's a lot of people hunt around here. We just don't get them to grow to this age class to produce what's back there.
Yeah. So, and he's 193 and 4/8.
Yes. Yep.
That's insane.
Sir. Yeah. He was a monster, and to kill him 300 yards from my back porch at that is also awesome. So
break down the story, however you want to break it down, man. You can lie a little if you want, or tell the truth. It's up to you.
So I first learned of him last, well, I guess that would be the 2019 season. Mm-hmm. It's actually that summer. We know all the neighbors around here, and a buddy of mine, he is actually a cousin to one of the neighbors, and he was like, "Hey, look at this deer my cousin's got." Mm-hmm. So, you know, I looked at it and I was like, you know, it's a pretty nice deer. And we own right here by my house is 12 acres. Across the road is maybe 15. So we don't own a lot of ground. So it's just a bottom field. We got a strip of woods on the ridge, the side of the ridge. And then the top field is beans, and that's the neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
So I threw a camera up, you know, who knows, maybe I'll catch him on camera. I checked it that next weekend, and he was, I mean, that first week he was there two or three different times. So he was obviously familiar with my ground.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first time I've ever really put a camera up over the summer period in this area. So, you know, it started from there. And that summer I got him regularly, you know, one to two times a week, nothing crazy. The top field was in corn that year. So he was bouncing all around. The neighbor kid kept getting pictures. They'd see him in the bean field bedded down, and the neighbors up the road would get him on camera. And what was real neat about this deer, he would summer right here by my house, and he would travel 2 miles to the next big patch of woods, or really the biggest patch of woods around here. And that's where he'd rut, you know, do all that winter stuff.
Yeah.
And so the only opportunity I had was that real early season before he'd moved over there.
Yeah.
So I hunted a few times there early season that 2019, and I never seen him, never spotted him in person myself, had a lot of trail camera photos, but he moved on in that winter and I never seen him again. He was gone for months straight, and they had a bunch of pictures of him over there all winter long. Nobody even seen him. There's one possible sighting of him, but nothing real firm.
Did anybody find his sheds or anything?
No, that was the other thing. Nobody found his sheds. I looked every possible place that I could around here, and I don't have a lot of woods, and it's basically all fields. So I did what I could to try to find him, and there was nothing here. And I guess it was probably, it may be maybe middle March, middle April, he showed up back down here and just looked god awful, looked like a doe almost. He just was skin and bones, just look ran down. And from there, he just stayed here. He never left. I mean, he lived here all spring, all summer. I watched him from my driveway by my garage, I think 5 different times over the summer. No I've kidding. Got video footage of him through a cotton scope. I watched him one night for probably 30 minutes down there with a doe and a fawn, just walking around feeding in the hay field.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, kept inventory on him where he was moving from. And it was a bean field up here last summer. So he was a bean deer. That's where everybody seen him. And, actually the neighbor kid seen him up in that bean field almost full grown last year. And, so from there, I kind of put a game plan together. I actually sat on the neighbor's grain bin August 15th, I believe it was, and I videoed him for a solid hour that evening, feed up along the beans and the corn.
No kidding.
Yeah, yeah, that was awesome.
And, that's a good tactic if you got a grain bin.
Yeah, yeah, it is. Well, the way the land lays, it's a holler that comes down, and then it's the hillside up to the top bean field. So there's no good way to watch that bean field unless you're on top of a grain bin. So mm-hmm. That's what I ended up doing. I got some good footage of them.
And they call that a Midwestern mountain.
Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure. So let's see from there, you know, I just trail cam pictures kept rolling in, and I say he shed August 31st. I had a picture of him shedding velvet beans in his horns. And from there, he ghosted me. He left. He was gone. The neighbors started getting pictures of him up 2 miles away, and he was over there.
Can I ask you, before you go any further, at this point, you know, while you're filming him in velvet and watching him at that point in time, how many people besides, like, the neighboring properties knew about this deer?
Well, I was trying to keep him a secret, but
well,
if you know my grandpa, it's pretty difficult. So me, the neighbor kids, they knew he was around, but they only had one velvet picture of him because he lived right here behind my house because it was a bean field. We have spring water right here. We've got cover. He's got everything right here. So we didn't have to move like he had to in 2019 to get to them other bean fields.
Yeah.
So pretty well for majority of the summer, it was me and my buddy. That's all that knew about it. And I'd say it was when he moved off was when everybody started to know about him because they started getting pictures, word got out. And so he I'd say it was that time frame. It was later, right before season started. So from there they started getting pictures. I was kind of just hopeless, like, okay, he's gone for the year, he's gonna do what he did last year, but that changed. So I got a neighbor up behind me here. They had a bean field and they actually watched him two nights, 1 week, the week before I killed him. Actually, they watched him two evenings and the bean field bedded down and he'd bed down and feed and whatnot. I just wouldn't come close enough for them to get a shot.
Yeah.
And, from there, he moved back after that. For what reason, I don't know what made him come back, but it was one of the beginning September there. He showed back up and he, you know, left again and whatnot. And when he came back, I was actually hunting at my farm out. We have another farm out on the other side of the interstate. It's a couple miles away and whatnot. And I was just trying to do a little doe management out there. And my buddies were all calling me stupid for hunting out there when I had him on camera. And I was like, well, you know, I just want to play it safe as possible. I don't want to put pressure on them. Don't want to run them other deer out of here. And so he showed back up and I had a thought in my mind. He showed up 2 days after the last picture. So I was like, maybe he's on a pattern. So I got in a stand. Deer cast showed great. We had a cold front roll in. We had a north wind. Everything was perfect.
It's adding up.
Yeah, laid out. And I got to the stand. I don't remember what time. But it was probably an hour before dark. I look over to my left, and all I see is his horn stuck up out of the beans. He was bedded down 80 yards from me all evening. I had no idea.
No kidding.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah. You talk about nerve-wracking. And so I'm in disbelief. He's 80 yards away, bedded down. Well, when I seen him, I guess he stood up. The beans were just so tall, I could see the top of his horns. You know, he scratched around on himself there. And he bedded back down and I'm freaking out. I mean, this is the biggest deer I've ever seen in my life. And, from
in
there,
the county since the 50s, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't see it very often around here.
Yeah.
So, the evening went on and he actually stood back up, I don't know, half hour before dark and he started feeding away from me. So at that point I'm hopeless, you know, I got to do something to try getting him to come back because this might be the only opportunity.
What day is this?
This is October 1st.
Okay.
Nice.
So I actually had him on camera 2 days before that and then the 2 days before that. And that's just a pattern I went off of.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
So he was feeding away and he got about 100 yards out and I'm hopeless. And so I decide, well, maybe I'll throw a grunt at him. There ain't no other bucks in the area. He's the king right here.
Yeah.
So let's throw them out there and see what happens. Well, It was windy enough where he couldn't hear me. So I'm freaking out about that too. So all of a sudden, for what reason, I have no idea. He just turns around and comes walking off the hill towards me. And he crosses through my lane at 40 yards and the beans got his vitals covered. So I'm not shooting. And I'm thinking he's going to walk down below me. Well, he just disappears behind a cedar tree across the fence yet. And I can hunt all the neighbors right there. And I was grunting at him the whole time. He never could hear me. Well, finally the wind died and I threw out, I think I doe bleated with followed with a couple grunts. And next thing you know, the stick cracks right there below me and he's 15, 20 yards walking right under my tree. And so I draw back as quietly as possible. And, you know, he walks at kind of angles back up to the beans and quarters away and 11 yards. I stopped him and that's what she wrote. I double lunged him and I watched him pile up at like 40 yards from the stand. So
no kidding.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
Oh, I bet, man.
Freaking out.
Yeah. Yeah. It, honestly, it's all kind of a blur. It's all kind of a blur. That whole evening after that's a blur. Just it was incredible. So I watched him fall. I knew where he was at. So I packed my stuff up.
So hold on, I got to ask you this. You're up in the stand. You're freaking out like you just saw this happen and went down. So you have that confidence, that seal of approval that he's down. Because if you don't see him fall, there's always like that little sliver.
Yeah, exactly.
Out in your mind, you know, and then you start like thinking all crazy. How many people did you call or text before you got down?
I forgot to include this. So I shot him and right away I knew it was a perfect shot. Mm-hmm. And I watched him go down and so the neighbor, he caught wind of me hunting on him. So he started hunting up the road here and I let out a scream when he went down and he actually heard me screaming and he said, I told myself, I guarantee you he shot that freaking deer. And, so I let out that scream and right away I called my dad. I said, he's freaking down. He's right here. I watched him fall and he's like, oh, okay. Just, you know, let him go. So, I called him first, called a couple other people. And, I got out stand and took off running down through the woods, ran down to the bottom field and he picked me up down there. And, I think he was just as much in shock as I was.
Yeah, of course.
And so we came back up and I got everything unloaded and then we went back to get them. And then from there, I sent out one picture to like three people. And from there, I think 40 or 50 people probably showed up that evening.
Oh, to your house?
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody in the freaking county was here. So
awesome, man. Hey, talk about picking that buck up for the first time. I just like those like snippets, you know?
Okay. So, you know, there was a lot of talk with me and as he ventured away, I started showing a couple other buddies and everybody was all about score, you know, what's he score? So there was a lot of talk and one buddy's like, oh, he's in the 190s, 180s. Mm-hmm. And, I was like, there ain't no way. He just ain't that big, not around here. So as soon as I walked up and we seen him or found him in the beans, it was a little bit of a search because the beans were so tall. And the first thing I said is he's definitely in the 190s. And it was unbelievable because I didn't believe he had that much mass. And just putting your hands on him, it's just even the pictures that I sent you, it just doesn't do him justice as the mass he has. And you know, me and dad walked up on him and picked him up and we're hugging and jumping and you know, all awesome. Them emotions racing through your mind, you know. Yeah. It's a good feeling, but at the same time, it's kind of sad because you don't have nothing to look forward to. So
yeah, but it's pretty good. It
outweighs. Yeah, it is.
yeah.
It's pretty
good. Outweighs the bad. So
yeah, definitely does. Yeah. So let's talk about, you know, were people just showing up at your house without being like, "Hey, man, I'm coming over to see your."
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Of course. Yeah. Let me guess. You were by the tailgate or you had them in the garage and you were having a beer with that. I don't know how old you are. So maybe you're having a Bush NA or whatever, or Line and Kugel's NA, but you were having a good time. I bet you were ready to, you know, knock some steam off and kind of enjoy the moment.
Oh yeah. We got up to the house with him and we had him on the bed of the truck and my grandpa lives right up next to me and he showed up. He knew all about him all summer long. Cause the biggest part of my whole summer was keeping him out of down there. Because my grandpa likes to cut trees.
Loves
cutting trees, loves splitting wood. And it took everything he wanted not to go down there all summer long. And the first thing he said to me was, well, I'll be down there tomorrow cutting up trees.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. So, he they showed up. And from there, just people started rolling in like crazy. And nobody gave any warning. They just showed up, which is perfectly fine. It was a good time.
I bet.
Everybody was celebrating, but at the same time, everybody that was hunting them up the road was kind of disappointed because they didn't need to go hunting the next day.
Yeah, yeah.
But we had a heck of a crowd here that evening, and the first thing, they brought out the tape and started scoring him and whatnot. And
Yeah.
It was a good time all together. So
I bet, man. It's a stud. It's cool that he's, like, just right behind you there the whole time.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. Right over your shoulder.
Yep.
Did you guys have a name for him did you name him? Did you do that or?
I would have, but you know what? The only thing I ever called him was Big Boy. That's just what I said.
Yeah.
Obviously he's the biggest one around. So that's kind of the name that I stuck with him.
Yeah.
So that's what I kept on him. But
did you have anybody throw anything at you as far as like county record for the year, county this, you know what I mean? Like any like
Not really. You know, they talked about it, you know, that obviously it's the biggest deer killed in the county this year and probably mm-hmm. for a long time, whatever. And, you know, they talked about it, but, you know, nothing too crazy. So,
yeah. Yeah. Well, congratulations, man. That's a great story. You're yeah. really good at telling it. I'm sure you've told it 1,000 times.
Quite a few. Yes.
you seem like you've done a podcast or two with how just calm, cool, and collective you are. So.
Yeah. Had a few interviews and whatnot.
So. I can imagine. How many, what was there? Like, did you have magazines reach out and what people?
It was Giant Tracker, obviously.
Yeah.
I think Realtree. And then there's a couple small Facebook.
Yeah.
Whatnot.
Blog posts
some,
and stuff.
Yeah. I did some interviews on them and whatnot. Nothing too crazy. So.
Yeah. Well, cool, man. Well, congratulations.
Awesome, man. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate you sharing your story and jumping on last second. And sure. Man, that's just awesome, man. It's great to see people kill true giant deer and then also be, you know, having the knowledge to really appreciate what it is.
Yes, sir.
Because I feel like every now and again you see someone shoot a giant deer and they don't understand what they have really.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, and you know, everyone kind of looks at that guy like, man, luck, but it's just being out there. Too, yeah. You know, I mean, and you obviously were pretty calculated, you know, you had a good pattern and you made your move when you made mm-hmm. your move and it worked out for you. So good
yeah.
work.
Yeah. And at that, you know, the other thing that's pretty crazy about it and makes it a little bit better is it's the home farm, mm-hmm. you know, it's 12 acres and it's right behind the house. I mean,
yeah.
my closest trail camera picture of him was like 100 yards from the back porch. So
that's awesome.
That's crazy.
Yeah. That makes it also real sweet. So,
yeah, I can imagine, man. Well, very cool. Thank you so much for this. So if you want to plug anything, your Instagram or anything like that, feel free. If you don't care, that's fine too. So
No, I'm good.
I love it.
I'm good. I don't do the Instagram deal. I got Facebook, whatnot, but I'm pretty simple guy. So
that's great, man. I love it. Well, thank you so much. Clint, thank you for jumping on episode 2. Thank you everyone for viewing, listening, all that. Trent, you're the man and congratulations, yep. man.
So yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. It's
of course
an awesome thing to do. So
kill a bigger one this year, man.
Hey, I'm trying. It's tough.
Yeah, that's going to be a hard buck to top, my man.
Yeah. Yeah. You got that right.
Trying to kill one that big in Illinois where big bucks live.
Yeah.
Or known to live. So everyone, thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you on episode 3. Appreciate you. Go shoot a giant.